Into our first question. And I'm just going to summarise the questions, read them out, and one or other of us will, all the hard ones, I'm going to slip to Sandy, and I'll chip in where I can. This question is, what would be a Christian response to a point which came out of the Ireland situation, the Ireland referendum, that the law change is more about recognition rather than rights, that the law change is more about celebrating gay marriage as a means of validating gay people's sense of worth? Do you want to respond, Sandy?
Tony, I think that's absolutely an impetus for many people. It's about recognition and encouraging approval. The law shapes and educates, and that's why it's important to think about what valid uses of law in a public policy sense are legitimate, and what justifies the government, that's what we're talking about with law, civil law, it's engagement with our private lives and so on. And I think that that's why we have to think of marriage as an institution. And I stress that, if you assume people want approval, adults would like approval for their relationship, well, then you have a competing interest, and it's the vulnerable children in particular. The law has an institutional value in normalising the protection of the children who come from marriage, and we are undermining that institution. So at the sort of secular discussion, I think that the costs to vulnerable people are too great. I'll leave it there.
Yes, quite so. There's a related question here. Gay couples are already able to adopt and have children. Does redefining marriage really make such a difference? And there'd be quite a similar answer, yeah. I guess. It doesn't make a great deal of difference at all, really, in terms of the practical outcome.
Yeah, but it's absolutely distinguish adoption, even the wonderful idea of adoption is a retrieval ethic. But marriage is not a retrieval ethic. Marriage is a fundamental natural institution for society. And so Katie Forst, the person on Q&A raised by same-sex parents, said she could conceive where if a child has had no parents but in bashed and mistreated and so on, she could conceive a lesbian mother adopting the child, and that's better than the situation she was in. But that's a retrieval thing, and marriage law is about what we normalise, yep, as the right way to conduct our relationships for the protection of children and so on. It's a totally different situation. Just one other thing. Same-sex adoption was rushed through our New South Wales Parliament. At least the Victorian Parliament actually bothered to talk to the children who were conceived by ART and didn't know their biological parents. In New South Wales, that evidence wasn't even considered, and it's an emerging area of concern. And I won't go into all the process, but it was dreadfully rushed through. And we were blindsided by that.
A related question on that research, someone has asked about links to some of those research papers that Sandy might have mentioned. There are some mentioned in the back of your outline. You'll notice a whole series of links and of articles and of further reading. What I'm going to do tomorrow or the next day, as soon as I can get to it, on the CCL website at more.edu.au/CCL, I'm going to put that whole list up also as clickable links so that you don't have to type out those long links. I'll put them all up there as a set of clickable links, and that includes Sandy's...
Yeah, the Regnerus studies are the ones. They're the large population-based ones using a variety of objective measures from people who've moved into adulthood. A couple of them mention Regnerus as the name.
Do you want to mention this as well while we're here?
Yep, and I recommend this book by Ryan Anderson, public policy philosopher and lawyer, from a Roman Catholic background, but as I said, sort of the natural law secular approach to it. They're very engaging with people of religious faith. Highly recommended.
Sandy, a question here, and there's a couple of similar questions. The view of marriage you're talking about, which captures God's ideal for marriage, as it were, what God created marriage to be, this question is saying, does it really capture the brokenness of reality? So you're saying that, for example, marriage is oriented towards children, what if you can't? What about infertility and the tragedy of that? Does that mean that if you're infertile, if you know you're infertile, you shouldn't marry? Yep. Or any if that kind of brokenness is part of our reality in the world, yep. Well, what about the brokenness of sexual orientation?
Sure. Yeah, I just did a funeral for mother-in-law of a Moore College graduate who married again. She was a widow, married at 70 to an 80-year-old. They were never going to have children. I don't think they should have been banned from marrying because, barring a Sarah-like miracle, they weren't going to have children. Because their relationship inherently modelled the kind, remember that word of Tony's? The kind of relationship that a marriage is. They were grandmotherly and grandfatherly together towards their grandchildren and step-grandchildren. They could bring the maleness and masculinity and femininity to their marriage, and they could model what husbands and wives ought to treat each other like to the younger husbands and wives and people who are still thinking about marriage. Infertility is not intrinsic to a male-female relationship. We don't do fertility tests before we permit people to marry. It's a sad fallen situation, but it's a situation of fallenness, not of the ideal and not of the natural orientational purpose. And so it's in a different category. And I think that once you stop to think about it, quite clearly so.
Sure. One or two final ones. Sandy, it's asking, do you think Facebook and other social media efforts to promote traditional marriage are valuable or even vital to push against the tide of gay marriage advocacy? This is an interesting one, isn't it? Because as someone recently pointed out to me, one of our problems as Christians is that our arguments about the nature of marriage, about its purposes, and about how that is legislated and fits into our society, they're considered thoughtful arguments. I mean, Sandy had a 10-second version, but the 10-second version wasn't really that adequate either. On the other side, you've got heart. On the other side, you have heart plus heart equals marriage, or just the slogan, marriage equality. How do we deal with the sloganeering? And do you think we sloganeer back in return? What's your thoughts?
More specifically to the Facebook sort of stuff, we do end up in echo chambers there because of the, our friends are our friends, and then it selects the things we're interested in from the people. I still think we've got to be involved and engaged there in the sort of manner that we've both spoken about. I do think there's some value in being able to state your point concisely that gets you straight to a key issue. But you're right. Ryan Anderson, whom a couple of us heard recently, said we don't have a slogan that is as good as the marriage equality slogan. But I don't think it's hard to... I think often we're better questioning, as not just sloganeering, and it doesn't take much to question the heart plus heart kind of thing. Why one? Why not two brothers who want to care, bachelors who want to care with it, why can't they marry? Why not? There were two heterosexual males who said, well, we want to marry now. We're not planning to sleep together here, but we're great mates. We want to share our bank accounts. We want to do stuff together. Why not? And there's no, there's really no logical reason.
Well, it happened at the conclusion of Boston Legal, didn't it? No, that's right.
I haven't seen West Wing either, so...
I think our time is just about gone. I might take one final one. Do we want to say anything about the whole issue of gender dysphoria or transgender and those people whose genetics are opposed to the body they're in and that kind of thing? And in terms of your presentation, how does that fit in? I might start off here.
We do want to speak to such people and with such people and learn. I don't think this is always in the same category. And I found Patricia Werikoon's first book in this area reasonably helpful in that it just introduced me to this is a complex area. But I certainly don't want to be encouraging the plasticity that appears to be out there either. But I'm not sure that we're I'm not sure we're quite talking apples and apples. No, let's leave that alone.
It's also one of the curious contradictions of the debate over the past 30 or 40 years, if you've followed it. How, as in terms of how the debate is presented from the other side, there's a constant flipping of the argument. It goes through periods of kind of essentialism, where who I am is something that's so deep inside of a part of me that I can't change and that therefore must be respected. And then the argument flips towards choice and preference. So it was very interesting. In the mid to late 70s, the language was all sexual preference. Those of you who were around in the late 70s, early 80s might remember that. That the argument was, you will not tell me, I'm free to decide what my sexuality will be, and you can't tell me. And if I want to choose to love another man, I will choose to love another man. And it was volitional, and it was about preference. Mm. Sometime in the mid to late 80s, the language changed, and it became about born that way. It became about genetic determinism. And it's the proponents of same-sex marriage and of sexual plasticity, in one sense, need to make up their mind. Is gender a social construct? We keep saying it is. Is gender a biological construct that is just given? You're born a particular way. I don't think the other side of things has really explained that clearly.
I know we've got to finish. Can I sort of SMS a question to these guys, sort of metaphorically?
Yep.
And that is, I was really helpfully challenged. We were discussing this as a group of pastors in Wollongong. We get together every so often. And he kept saying, look, Sandy, you're wanting to talk about marriage. He says, I'm wanting to talk about Jesus. He had the high moral ground there, didn't he? But he did help me with a question that I think is a really good question to be doing, that, to be using marriage to talk about Jesus as well as the other way around. And that is, to your friends, why on earth do you think Jesus cares about who you sleep with?
Yeah.
I'd encourage you to try it out. Okay, you know I'm a Christian. Why on earth do you think Jesus cares about who you sleep with? Tell me your responses and we'll find out. I'm going to try it.
Great one. In many ways, questioning, asking good questions, and taking the discussion in a direction that our friends and family mightn't be expecting is always really helpful. It's partly why I was suggesting, go back and talk about whether the world is a created thing or not. Whether is marriage a particular kind of thing or not, and how would you know?
Yeah, and that's the answer, because Jesus is the creator.
Yeah. He's interested in it because he's made the world a certain way and wants us to live a certain way.